Bonk.
Daniel.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you this fine afternoon?
Good. How are you?
Good. Lazy weekend. We're coming fresh off of a pre-show Puzzle Fighter fight.
That's right. You beat me. Beat me fair and square decisively. Two out of the three rounds went to you, the first two, so we didn't even have a third.
It usually goes to the rubber match.
It does.
Every time. And it always comes down to, it's not usually the slow death. It's typically the, like, oh, we just got a big old dump put on us.
Yeah, it kind of, like, even for me, when I lose, it kind of sucks when it's just like my tiny little mistakes building up and leading to my death. I much prefer like it one of those deals where it's like a total blowout and like all of a sudden my board goes from completely empty to just covered.
Yeah, that's
with
a better
shit.
Feeling that having your opponent just like, oh, you earned it. Mm-hmm. You must have done some cool shit over there, versus like, I shouldn't have been waiting. I'm getting too fancy here or whatever. And you're just slowly watching it like, I don't have any breakers down there ready to go. And it's just a slow bleed out.
Yeah, sometimes when I die, I'll like glance over at your board. Like if I die in one of those times where it's just like my fuck ups lead to my death, and I'll see that you have like a giant chain of like yellow gems, and it's like, man, I almost wish I could have seen that.
Yeah.
It would have been like the Puzzle Fighter victory equivalent of like a giant explosion versus like death by a thousand cuts.
Yeah,
I was doing.
Totally. I think that sound, like, especially if you're locked in, if it's a really tense game, uh-huh. and then all of a sudden you just start hearing that shattering,
mm-hmm.
it's just like, oh no, that like impending doom of like, I need to try to nullify right now and do something to counteract this.
Yeah, God, that game's so satisfying. I love how when you like keep adding gems to like a 4x4 grid and just keep adding 2x2, yeah, it just grows, like it adds to like a single gem rather than them being all separate. It's just very visually satisfying.
Oh, it looks like a big nice rock candy there, and then when it shatters, it makes it even more satisfying.
Yeah, rocks shattering, I think there's something to be said about like there's definitely a correlation between how viscerally satisfying a puzzle is to play, like in regards to Puzzle Fight, the shattering gems, or like, for example, Candy Crush, where you're crushing candies.
Yeah.
And how fun it is overall, right? I mean, I'm not saying that's the only reason why Puzzle Fighter is fun. It's a brilliant game, but that it definitely adds to it.
Yeah, versus like a Puyo Puyo, which is like gelatinous, and like there is a satisfaction of seeing them kind of glom together, mm-hmm. but like I don't think the blurping, just kind of the popping of the Puyos is nearly as satisfying.
Yeah,
to me.
And they don't mesh with the Tetris blocks either when both the Puyos and the Tetrises are.
Yeah, Tetris is so satisfying because they all just interlock so well.
Uh-huh.
That's a different type of satisfying, I think. But yeah, I think Puzzle Fighter is probably my all-time favorite.
You know, I'm beginning to notice with myself like why, you know, like those types of puzzles do it for me, like obviously Puzzle Fighter, Money Puzzle Exchanger, or Money Idol, whatever it's called, and Tetris and stuff like that, because you're cleaning stuff up as it comes. You're like, Money Exchanger, you're, you know, simplifying and organizing and consolidating and stuff like that. There's such a nice satisfaction in breaking things down, cleaning things up, making the area clear, you know what I mean?
Especially when there's a bunch of like disparate like ones and stuff like that, and you do something to like clean it all up, and it's like, oh, now they're fives, or I comboed it into like, now they're all hundreds, and let's put them next to a 500. Like,
yeah,
it's those games, especially a good two-player one, mm-hmm. which I'll put it out here, I've said it on the stream, if anyone knows of a good two-player arcade, mm-hmm. like MAME puzzle, like head-to-head, mm-hmm. Games like that, let us know. We are big on Puzzle Fighter and Money Puzzle Exchanger. Those are the two that we're doing right now. But always looking for like a good one. We haven't seen a good Tetris one yet.
Well, speaking of head-to-head, at Hat-tris, I played a little bit of that, and man, what a silly game. You were telling me it was the maker of Tetris, the OG maker of Tetris.
Yeah.
I forget his name, Russian.
Alexis something or other, yeah.
Yeah, and obviously it's very influenced by that. But instead of little blocks, there's hats. It's like a line of hats. And at the bottom of the board are like six just, you know, inconspicuous looking guys. They all look the same. It's not like one hat belongs to this person and the other type of hat belongs to the other person, but what you're trying to do is just like stack up matching hats, and you know, there's a combination of different hats, and they come down two hats at a time, so you might have like a baseball cap with like a fedora, but you know, you're stacking fedoras on this one guy and the baseball cap guy is on the other side of the board, so you just kind of strategize that way. And then sometimes there's balls of fire that come down. But, you know, if this sounds weird to you, it's because it is weird. It's definitely lacks the simplicity and the strategy and the freedom of Tetris or any of these other games.
There's an elegance to Tetris that I think this feels a little clunkier from watching.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very inelegant. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But always on the lookout for those type of games. Very, very satisfying. You play some solo as well. You seem more Money Puzzle solo.
Yeah, because Money Puzzle is just so, so fun. And, like, it's, you know, it has more of that, like, high score element, too. Like, you want to do better than the last time. Whereas Puzzle Fighter, like, I feel like Puzzle Fighter, you really need the opponent there to enjoy it. You know what I mean?
It's kind of a fighting game.
It is, yeah. You can play against AI, but that's the same thing. It's two boards on the screen, whether you're playing against another player or AI. With Money Puzzle Exchanger, you can play solo, and it's still really fun.
Yeah, and if you're looking to try out either one of these, Puzzle Fighter is on Xbox Live Arcade. You can download it there. It's like a backwards. I don't think people actually say Xbox Live Arcade anymore. I think that's very much a relic of the 360 days, but it's still burned into my head. Yeah,
yeah, same.
It's backwards compatible on the 360 version of the arcade game. You can play on a current generation Xbox. Mm-hmm. It's confusing, but it all works. And then Money Puzzle Exchanger is on Switch, and it is the arcade version. It's like the Neo Geo Classics.
It works, but works very strangely. I remember when we tried to play it prior to getting the meme cabinet, it would, like, the interface for the 360 would pop up and you'd have to, like, log in that way.
Oh, for Puzzle Fighter?
Yeah.
Oh, anytime you do the backwards compat stuff, it's so weird, like, pulling up old gamer pictures and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I was playing Banjo-Kazooie on that and it'd be like, gamer picture unlocked. And it's like, oh great. Can't wait to use that. I'm pretty sure you can't now unless it's in the, like, backwards compat stuff.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I would love to actually, like, navigate through an old Xbox menu, like, you know, the home screen menu.
The blades?
It's such a relic of that era.
Oh, yeah.
But there's something kind of appealing about that. And plus, supposedly all the stuff from the early 2000s is coming back now. Like, that's having its renaissance.
Oh, that's the nostalgia now?
Makes sense. You know how, like, styles from, like, the 90s come back in the 80s? We are yet until now to have seen that 2000 era come back, and now it's starting to come back.
Bucket hats and JNCOs?
Well, no. I'm talking more like low-rise jeans.
Low-rise,
Ed Hardy shirts. You know, you remember Ed Hardy, right?
I know the Ed Hardy stuff. What is low-rise jeans, though?
So that's, like, nowadays, or what has been popular for a long time now is, like, the high-rise jeans, where it goes up, like, kind of past your belly button.
Oh.
And versus,
is this,
like,
for women, mostly?
Right, yeah. Okay. That's what I'm most familiar with.
Gotcha. Oh, yeah, because I do remember, like, back then, you would see a lot of stuff, whether it was in, like, SSX mm-hmm. or wrestling,
like,
or something. You
coming
out. Totally, yeah, you would see certain characters and stuff that always did that, you know?
Thankfully, I feel like this trend is reserved for, like, teenagers on TikTok, and it hasn't gotten to, like, the 25 to 35-year-old woman era yet, so hopefully it's not going to, because not that I'm one to follow trends, but it would just be, that's the thing with, like, the issue with the super high-rise jeans. I don't dislike how they look. I dislike how they look on me, because I have a short torso and I have a weird body, so, like, those kinds of jeans don't work on me. But because they're so popular, if you want to get a pair of pants, they're going to be at a minimum high-rise. Sometimes they'll be, like, super high-rise, which is just ludicrous. It's just like
default,
sitting under your tits.
The default will basically change where it's, like,
exactly,
based on trends. Got
it. It's impossible to find, like, a normal rise jeans nowadays, although I imagine it will be more common as this trend continues to proliferate thanks to TikTok and whatnot. But
interesting. This is a world that's unbeknownst to me. Definitely got more glimpses into this since meeting you, obviously.
Right.
Fashion, huh?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm partial to dresses, and dresses are kind of timeless. I don't know.
I don't know if guys just have it easy, because I've just been, like, t-shirt and jeans guy, and that hasn't changed, really.
Well, that's the thing about dresses. They're the most comfortable and the most practical. Most comfortable because they're free-flowing, and provided they're loose and not super tight, you have freedom of movement. And the most practical because you really have to go to the bathroom. Instant underwear takeoff. You're down on that seat, you're shitting. You know what I mean? Instant. It's perfect for emergencies.
I've never experienced that.
And for other situations that might arise.
What
where
now?
You need to take off your clothes quickly.
My goodness.
Yes.
This is, children are listening to this podcast.
And they know what they might be, you know, have unique circumstances. Like, oh, my shirt is on fire or something.
What?
If your clothes are on fire, yeah. You will admit, Dan, that if your clothes are on fire, it's way easier to take off a single piece of clothing than your pants, than your jeans. You know what I mean? Than
a
belt.
I've rarely been in full on. I don't think I've ever been on fire. I think I've come into contact with fire, mm-hmm. Like fleeting burns and things like that.
Kids are on fire a lot, right?
I don't think so.
Don't they? They play with fire a lot or something? Kids.
I used to put a bunch of like sticks and stuff in a wheelbarrow at my grandpa's and set it on fire.
Well, I feel like when I was a kid, all I was hearing constantly was stop, drop, and roll. And I never hear that anymore. So I imagine, I'm sure they want to instill that in you at a young age so that should you be on fire as an adult, you'd know what to do. But I also feel like kids are probably more likely to be on fire than adults, right?
Well, maybe. Maybe I'm skewed because I've watched a lot of, I've seen plenty of indie hardcore wrestling in my day. Mm. So I've seen a lot of adults on fire. I've also seen them try to stop, drop, and roll and be like, that shit doesn't work. So
does it not work?
I've seen certain clips of people trying it and being like, that didn't work at all. I don't know. I don't want to give fire advice here. That is the common wisdom, is the stop, drop, and
okay,
roll.
Okay, well... You know, if you were to cover yourself in lighter fluid and then light a match, you would be killing yourself. That would be
it's a Rage Against
suicide.
The Machine album cover. Oh, look at that. I didn't even see it coming. There we go. Nice. Whoa, with a guitar lick, too.
Well, that was actually a right turn, like a race car sound.
Oh, okay. I see.
But I could do...
Either one. Pick your choice. Pick your choice.
Why not both?
We're nailing it, I think. I think we're doing
right
a great
into your
job.
Ear holes, listeners.
There we go. That's right. We watched and are discussing, now this is important, the Suicide Squad.
Yes.
Not Suicide Squad. This is a thing that, as people who, historically, we have never been comic book movie people,
mm-hmm.
So we had to figure out what the hell was going on here.
Right. I don't think there's probably a lot of value in getting to the nitty-gritty of this one versus the first one, because I'm sure if people, you know, are care about what's going on here, they probably are very familiar with it. But there was a Suicide Squad movie like 5 years ago.
Which is apparently terrible.
Yeah.
But the confusing thing is, again, we won't spend too much time here. Some of the characters from that one, mm-hmm. notably Harley, what's it, Harley Race? Harley Quinn.
Reprising his role as Harley Quinn.
I don't know if there are two different personalities than Harley Race and Harley Quinn. They're very dumb. Looking at a framed picture of Harley Race looking at me right now. Does not look like Harley Quinn. No, Harley Quinn, played by Margot Robbie, Rick Flagg, played by Joel Kinnaman. And Amanda Waller, Viola Davis, and also Jai Courtney, who's in the beginning of this movie, played Boomerang in the first one. So there is some crossover, and I guess it exists in the same like universe-ish, but it's just like not even addressed. The first movie is just like not even a thing here.
Yeah, and you know, being very just mildly familiar with the first movie, I didn't watch it. I just like read a brief plot synopsis.
We've seen pictures of Jared Leto.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I remember, seeing that and being like, oh my god, this is he's getting to unleash all his like douchebaggery. Just remember the stories about him being like, yes, a method actor,
sending dildos to people and stuff, and just like, fuck this guy.
I feel like he wanted to kind of establish this weird like mythos around the Joker character after Heath Ledger had done something similar.
Yeah,
because Heath Ledger's Joker was this like really obviously really dark take, like very different from what is in the comic books, right? And I'm not wholly familiar, but it was kind of a darker, more gritty, kind of realistic version.
It depends on which version. Like in the comics, there definitely are ones where Joker's just like, you know, squirting flower acid at you or whatever. Or, or there are definitely darker Batman graphic novels.
Well, from what I remember, he was kind of doing a method type of thing, right? And you know, there's obviously associations between that character and his death, right? That being kind of the final role, if not one of the
I think something
final
came
roles
out afterwards, but like,
was filmed,
that was definitely
was
like
crazy,
right.
Yeah.
He died before it came out.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe Jared Leto wanted to continue that tradition because that guy has his head so far up his fucking ass.
It's more so than perhaps any entertainer I've ever seen. It's just been dripping out of him since the first time I saw him kind of in Hollywood. It's like, oh, this guy is smelling his own farts all day.
A lot of farts, man. I will say, I think he's a very good actor. Dallas Buyers Club was good.
He's
and
very talented.
Neander Wallace, Blade Runner 2049, that character was just, he really, was that just perfect for that role, I thought.
You're a huge 30 Seconds to Mars fan.
Of course, yeah. 30 Seconds to Mars, more like...
you gotta nail this, gotta stick the landing.
God. more like 1 second for me to shut off it when it's playing on Spotify.
You know what? We'll workshop it down, but I think you got the right idea. Yeah, yeah. I could
cut that up a little bit, yes. Make it a little smoother, but you get the idea. Yeah. We don't like Jared Leto. But anyway.
Yes.
Yeah, he's nowhere to be seen in this movie, thankfully.
Yeah. And the characters that are here are super fun. I really like this the squad itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Dan and I have talked about it previously. We're not very familiar with these, DC and Marvel movies.
Not at all.
So it seemed like this is kind of a motley crew of, B-list supervillains, right?
I guess that's kind of what's... With the
exception of, Harley Quinn.
Well, that's the thing. Is not knowing Suicide Squad at all. But, I've just been around, quote-unquote, I hate this, nerd culture as long as I have. I've worked with a lot of people just that are really into comics. Yeah, and it's I think that's kind of the thing with the Suicide Squad is that... And keep in mind, this whole podcast... Keep in mind that we don't know what the fuck we're talking about in terms of comics or comic movies. This is purely as a, outsider's perspective.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
But I think that's the idea of the Suicide Squad, is they're kind of these, outcast, weirdo superheroes. It's not Justice League. It's not right. Batman and right. Superman. Or it's not the Avengers, you know?
And so, okay. So I feel like it's weird to think about this movie coming out 5 years after after Suicide Squad and not being, explicitly a sequel or anything like that. But when you think about the Suicide Squad, not in terms of it being, a actual official group of people, but rather
right.
just the nickname for this program that this
system.
It's a prison system and this agency that kind of manages supervillains in some capacity or whatever. They have this program where they'll hire a bunch of supervillains to take down a threat that's a huge existential threat to humanity kind of thing. And in return, they get their sentences reduced. So it's kind of I love that premise of Running Man.
I was
type
just
going
to say Running Man, even down to the heads exploding thing.
Right.
In Running Man, that's prison, and they put the fucking thing on your head.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the failsafe if any of these prisoners want to leave the mission or whatever is that they have these bombs implanted in the base of their neck that will. They will explode. And we see it happen very early on in the movie. We see evidence of this. So
with Michael Rooker, who I'd seen the trailers and stuff. And so we got to go into the opening here because the opening's awesome.
And it's so cool.
It so quickly sold me on you know what? I think my problems with superhero movies aren't really going to be a thing here. Because my thing, we've talked before at length about how we don't feel like there's stakes because it seems like everyone just comes back to life and stuff. This whole movie doesn't feel like a superhero movie. It feels like a hey, we're sending in a squad of we got this mission. It's almost something seven, the Dirty Dozen or the something seven, these old 70s movies and stuff. I haven't seen a lot of them, admittedly. But you know what I mean? Not a superhero thing.
Right. Yeah, totally. Yeah, totally. And you touched on it. I'll just go a little deeper why this movie is different from my expectations of comic book movies. As you say, the issue is stakes. It's at the climax of a movie, any superhero Marvel movie I've seen, the vast majority, I should say, it's always I don't feel too invested because I know ultimately that they're not going to kill Thor in some brutal way or some shit. You know what I mean? I might be swallowing my words or my pride if it turns out that he did actually die and I just didn't see it.
Well, real quick, I think you witnessed a part of this long conversation we had in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. I was playing Frisbee with Ben Hansen as he explained the appeal of the Marvel filmography
to me. The Avengers.
And I was explaining, how hey, there's no stakes or whatever. And the thing he said to me makes me feel that way even stronger is that, and spoilers for the Marvel 86 movies if you haven't seen it, but it sounds like I remember this huge deal on social media that Thanos snapped his fingers and half of Spider-Man and all these dudes died. And it's wow, that sounds like stakes. But then Hansen explained to me that oh, now they're all just back and there's different timelines and all those actors are back. So none of that shit matters, it sounds like.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. And the other thing is too, I feel like all the action is comes from like the same brand of action writing, right? You know,
and
all
comedy.
The action scenes, all the comedy scenes as well, but the action scenes are always hugely bombastic and just like the most ridiculous things are happening that nothing even matters. Like the small things are overshadowed. Like this movie focuses more on like the interactions between the characters and character development rather than these huge events, you know what I mean? These massive, bombastic action sequences.
Yeah, and maybe that's one of the downsides, at least for us. Obviously, a ton of people love it, but Hansen never went for hyperbole, explained to me that what Marvel is doing is the single most impressive feat ever accomplished in cinema. Mm-hmm. That is what he said. And he said it's because it's this one big story that's weaving throughout like 25 movies or whatever. And it's like, sure, that does sound very complicated, but then I wonder if that lends itself to kind of a homogenized feel to that, like you described. All the
exactly.
action feeling similar,
exactly.
all the comedy being that same type of snarky, you know,
yeah,
like
the
dialogue
so,
I hate.
Yeah, it's so weak. And it's just like, it's less comedy and more just like levity in times where there shouldn't be levity, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, or snarky statements and sarcasm. And it's like, I feel like it's all that same tone. Mm-hmm. And keep in mind, we've seen a handful of these Marvel movies. And I think the only one we really liked was Into the Spider-Verse, which seems like that's an outlier and that's not even like the other ones. So, you know, we've seen Thor Ragnarok and I've seen the first Avengers.
Saw
and
the Wolverine movie.
Oh, Logan. Yeah. That was early. I don't know if that's technically part of the, like, it might be.
Well,
but
I mean, it might not be in the Avengers, but it's one of those movies.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, even all these ones that everyone says, like, oh, these are the good ones, we don't like. And I don't want to turn this into Marvel versus DC because, like, from what I've seen with all the, like, Justice League and Snyder cut and all this stuff, like none of that appeals to me either. So it's not Marvel versus DC. I think it's me just saying this movie I like a lot.
Right.
You know?
That's all to say that Suicide Squad, it immediately rang very different to us, or the Suicide Squad. Sorry,
yes.
We're talking about this, but one that just came out. There was, you could tell by the opening sequence, because they introduced this Suicide Squad, this cast of characters, including Harley Quinn. So you like, it's easy for me, not being super familiar with this stuff, to feel like, okay, this is the Suicide Squad that we're sticking with.
I thought so too, with Michael Rooker, Pete Davidson, like known actors, and Jai Courtney.
Yeah, exactly. And then for that squad to be like quickly defeated in pretty hilarious
incredibly
fashion.
Violently.
Yeah, I thought it was really funny how Pete Davidson died, because he's like, he just like betrays everyone and then is like the first to get
his
face blown off.
His face completely caved in immediately. Just like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I see.
And then there's that Weasel guy, which was so effectively strange and weird.
Just like licking the window and like Pete Davidson wondering if he was a dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, just, I like Weasel a lot.
Yeah, he was like not really human, or he couldn't talk or anything like that. He seemed really dumb. Yeah, it was just really great. And then you learn shortly after that that was like intended to just be a distraction to get like the forces away from that side of the island. So it immediately proved itself to be really smart, much smarter than I expected it to be. And Idris Elba is like, oh my God, undeniable. Just that guy just fucking rules.
And now that you've seen The Wire.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like,
and this is like 16 years after The Wire.
Oh,
right?
The Wire started in like 2002 or something.
Still
yeah.
just like the ultimate badass.
He's just the best.
Oh my God, he's so cool.
He's incredibly cool. And he's like, I would say the lead of this. I'd say he's the main guy.
Maybe shared between him and Harley Quinn.
Yeah. So he's Bloodsport, and I'm not really familiar with his character, but he just seems like a general,
like
good
guns
at guns guy basically.
Munitions expert.
Yeah.
He says.
Which he has some pretty cool ones at the end there. He had that one that like rotated around and it's like, I want that in like an FPS or something. That seems great. So Idris is incredible. So you've got, Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn, and she survives that first assault. She's the only
captured.
One who survived. Oh, yeah, she gets captured. Does anyone else survive? Well, we find out at the end, Weasel survived.
I don't think anyone else survives.
No, Michael Rooker's head blows up. Mm-hmm. Pete Davidson gets his face shot up. Oh, Nathan Fillion as TDK, the like detachable arm guy. I really, like, that was a moment where I realized, like, okay, maybe this is going to be actually genuinely really funny, is when he's like writhing on the ground and his arms are just kind of separate, like
just
writhing
useless.
Around.
It's like some of those quirks in My Hero Academia. It's like, well, that sucks that you have Todoroki who's shooting fire and ice, and then you're just like have tape coming out of your
arm. Yeah, you're the grape guy. I don't know. Like, yeah. It actually was very My Hero Academia with some of these like quirks, basically. It feels kind of separate for a while after that, because it's like you've got the new Suicide Squad that comes in, which we'll touch on those characters in a second. But then since Harley was captured, I feel like the middle part of this movie is kind of two different movies. You kind of cut to like Harley doing this stuff like at the palace, and she's like kind of kidnapped, but then there's this brief thing where she's like kind of being courted by this new president guy before she kills him, and then she escapes and stuff.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. I liked how you know, she just kills him very matter-of-factly and quickly, just referring to like being able to identify red flags, which, you know, probably is a reference to your relationship with Joker.
Yeah, I would imagine.
I thought that was pretty cool. And her, like, escaping that whole complex was pretty neat. I thought it was visually awesome when all the flowers and the little Tweety birds were coming out of her machine guns when she was just massacring everyone.
Yeah, you know what I thought was, like, I've never been a big fan of the Zack Snyder stuff. I've seen, like, 300 and Watchmen. Like, his style of, like, very literal, like, we're going to go frame by frame of, like, this is the way this angle was in the comic book. We were doing this exact same thing. Like, I don't like that. Mm-hmm. Like, this felt comic booky, but in a way that, like, I felt like there was a lot of directorial intent here with, like, you know, I think he was making it feel like a comic book without being, like, absolutely devoted to, like, well, this is how it looks. Because I don't, as far as I know, this is not based on a specific, like, comic book or graphic novel in the Suicide Squad. So he just made the whole thing feel very comic booky, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, using the you know, characteristics of all the different villains and stuff like that to, you know, make, you know, inform their fighting style and their whole personalities. Like, obviously, Harley Quinn is like this flighty, kind of goofy, silly, but deadly, you know, villainess.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think Margot Robbie, I mean, I'm sure it's been said to death at this point, but she plays that character exceptionally well.
I'll say that's, out of the many surprises in this movie, to me, that's one of the bigger ones, is that every depiction of Harley Quinn I've ever seen, from the animated show to video games and stuff, has just nails on a chalkboard graded on me. I just hate that one. I'm Mr. J! I just hate that fucking voice. I hate all the cosplay. I hate all that. I just think it's the lamest shit. But I guess it's just credit to, I mean, you got to give some credit to the writing, obviously, from James Gunn, but like Margot Robbie is awesome.
Yeah.
Like, she's really good at this.
Yeah. And she's obviously been playing it for a while. I mean, this is her third movie playing Harley.
Yeah.
Quinn.
Yeah.
Yeah. She kills it. She's an incredible actress. She's proven that time and time again. But yeah, she definitely makes it so this character is almost likable. Like,
I was rooting for her.
And yeah. It was awesome.
I just like the weird little things. It's like, oh, I'm just going to like keep this spear. Yeah. And like things where she's like, oh, I don't know. Like, I don't, God or Jesus or someone probably wants me to have it. And then it's just, you think she's crazy. And then it actually like super plays into something at the end.
Yeah. So another one of my favorite scenes was while all that stuff's going down with Harley, the B team, like with Idris Elba and company, and a Peacekeeper played by John Cena, who does
young actor, this young up and coming actor. I think he's just been an actor his whole career. Jonathan Cena, yes.
And then there's Ratcatcher 2, who's this girl who can control rats. She's very sweet. Polka Dot Man,
I think. Yeah.
He has this like interdimensional virus, so he just like has to evacuate these weird deadly polka dots.
It's just like pustules on his face.
It's like the Skittles commercials kind of thing.
A gross Skittles commercial. Like, I love the thing in the middle of the night when I think Peacemaker's waking up and it's just like seeing him like scurrying into the woods and he just like shakes like a dog and all these like bright things come off him. Like,
yeah, so you take that character like for what it is, which I did at the beginning. I thought it was just going to be like a silly addition, but they really take their time and kind of giving him a sympathetic backstory. Like, the thing about his mom experimenting on him, and then from his perspective, everyone he sees is his mom.
Yeah.
Which is really funny in a lot of circumstances.
They call back to it a lot, and like, they don't just keep doing the same joke. Like, they make it funnier every time.
Yeah.
You know, like, you just see it the first time, it's like, oh, that's funny, everyone's his mom. But then it's like, what was in the dance club, like, everyone's his mom. And then, like, at the end, we'll get to, but like, the big monster mom was a great payoff for
that
this
thing. That was great, yeah. So the B team, they go to, their first priority is to rescue that flag guy, Joel Kinnaman.
Oh, and King Shark also.
King Shark,
Sylvester Stallone, which also hilarious. Very and likeable. Stallone seems to get it. And I he's definitely a big CG thing, but like, I like the look of it. Like, whenever there's close ups, like the skin all looked cool and everything, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely looked better at sometimes than other times.
Yeah,
but I thought, yeah, that was a great character. But they go to rescue Flag and they're like, you know, approaching this camp where they think, I guess, all these people are like his, what are the people that control the prisoners called? guards,
enforcers, prison guards,
prison guards,
yeah.
Sure. Whatever. The bad people are populating this camp, and then they like systematically kill all of them in increasingly brutal ways. And it was really funny to learn that they were actually the good guys. They were like the freedom fighters that they were killing.
They're like knocking like rotary fans into their dicks while they're in like bathtubs and stuff.
Yeah, making electrocuting them in the bathtub. Like some woman's like singing a song while she's folding laundry. And it's just like...
Cena's just like walking across the rooftop shooting blow darts at him.
Yeah.
There's that exploding bullet. It's this whole dick measuring contest between Cena and Idris Elba, mm-hmm. which is super good. It's like they're really just funny. Constantly like, oh, I'm going to kill more guys than you. Oh, I shoot tinier bullets more accurately.
Yeah. Shoot a tiny bullet through the center of your bigger bullet.
Which I thought was a throwaway line, but yeah, we get to that at the end. Yeah, there's a style to all this.
There is. And it's not just like they're all like just big beefy heroes or anti-heroes. Like there's this depth there. Like you don't exactly know watching this who you can trust and who you can't trust. Because while like, you know, as you're watching it, you kind of forget that like, oh yeah, they're all taken from prison. They're all prisoners. They're supposed to be bad. And then once you recognize that, like, it reminds you it in little ways, like with Cena, especially Cena's character, because he'll like talk about like maintaining the peace at all costs, whether that means killing men, women, and children.
Now rip
like,
as many throats.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So you remember that you can't really trust everyone, and that eventually comes back around. But that was a really funny scene. I really enjoyed it.
Even though they're villains and stuff, they do give them a humanity without being schlocky mm-hmm. about it, I would say. The closest it gets to kind of schlocky is like some of the scenes with like Idris Elba and his daughter. I feel like that kind of belonged, like there's something, it almost felt too earnest for mm-hmm. this movie. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's a fine line, because like I think you do have to give them some sort of humanity to kind of root for them as characters without veering too far into schlockiness. But like I think it worked with like Ratcatcher 2. I thought, you know, the stuff with her dad and everything controlling the rats really worked. And Idris plays everything great.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Cena is probably the most, I guess certainly by the end, I guess irredeemable one mm-hmm. because he never really shows any inclination to do anything for good. He right. seems to just enjoy like killing.
Right.
And then by the end, he is fully the one that's just like, hey, I'm just, you know, like morals and stuff don't really play a role with his character. So, but also he does a great job here. He's awesome in this.
Yeah, he's great. Perfect for this role. I was excited to learn that there's going to be a spinoff series with that character, starring mm-hmm. Cena.
So yeah.
It's pretty cool.
And, you know, he's got this burgeoning career, and I think, you know, he's obviously doing very, very well. But I preferred him in this than I did in Fast 9. Because mm-hmm. Fast 9, his role was pretty humorless.
Right.
And Cena's very funny.
Yeah.
And knows how to play stuff. And, like, there's enough humor to the Peacemaker character that like I think he nailed it here.
Yeah, it's interesting. He definitely lends himself best to like more comedic roles, I think.
Yeah, kind of like the meathead character you can laugh at, mm-hmm. like he did in like Trainwreck or this.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, because he's got like a dopey face. You know what I mean? It's like he's a big and strong guy, but he's got like kind of a funny like smile and stuff. So.
And absolutely not afraid to, you know, look like a fool
or
be
himself.
Very silly and stuff. Like he has proven that time and time.
Yeah,
again. He's got a great sense of humor.
In Trainwreck, he was really good, and we watched that together.
Yeah,
right? Yeah. that was good. So yeah, the point of their mission is to, I guess, recover this data or take this data out of this research facility.
There's like this Nazi era structure on this island, and it's doing some sort of awful experiment. Like it seems like the Suicide Squad doesn't actually need to know about it; they uh-huh. just need to destroy it and any evidence of whatever was going on.
Yeah, yeah, and it's in the midst of this like kind of government takeover, all this crazy coup stuff going on. So yeah, the ultimate big bad is this giant starfish looking thing with an eye, called Starro.
Which, oh my God, I love this. I thought this was like, I thought it was a superhero movie. And then it started, and I was like, this is more like kind of a cool action movie. And then it turns into a monster movie, like a kaiju movie with the star thing, with elements of like a zombie movie with like all the star, because it like opens up star armpits and shoots out all these little stars. I thought that was awesome. This CG was incredible with the giant eye and everything.
Yeah, it looked really good. And I could tell too when they would like zoom up on certain parts when you couldn't see the whole thing but could just see like pieces of its skin. Like that looked practical. You know, it looked real. It looked so good. And I actually read that this is like one of like this movie used more practical effects than any other like comic book film. You could see it. It looks really good.
Yeah, close-ups when like the stars were like kind of like attaching things to faces, and like there's parts where you go inside that research facility and like all these like awful like torsos that with the bottoms ripped off and like all these things eating away at faces. There was something really cool about the like zombie like prisoners with all the stars on their faces. There's that guy with the thinker or whatever. Right. I thought his look was it's just like this tracksuit really and funny. All these syringes in his head.
It was funny to me, especially when he's like around other people, because like something as strange looking as that, I feel like would warrant a few second looks, but everyone's just like totally unfazed. It's
in a gentleman's club, and like here comes the guy with all the syringes in his head, glowing syringes. When they do storm the thing at the end, there's a shot that it is a straight up fatality where the King Shark just rips that guy in half, and the lightning, like the slow mo lightning, it is the most gratuitous kill shot imaginable. And like the shark is like roaring as like all these organs are stripping. It is fucking awesome.
It's so funny. It's so good.
Also, like. He is James Gunn. I've heard his name a lot. You know, I haven't really seen all of his stuff. But then looking at his filmography, I kind of realized that I think I like all of his stuff. Slither was his directorial debut, and that was a long time ago. I remember loving Slither. Guardians of the Galaxy was one of the few Marvel movies that I saw and walked out of like kind of like, hey, I liked that. Mm-hmm. I never saw Volume 2, but I liked the first one. It sounds like he's back for 3. We read up on that whole thing. It seems like the directing style of like someone who used to do music videos. Cause
I could see it.
He does a lot of stuff to music. He's got Pixies in there, Just a Gigolo. Like a lot of action scenes are set to music. And it works.
Yeah, there's a lot of really, really creative shots. It's not at all like straightforward all the time. But one of the most memorable ones for me was like early on with Harley and the prime minister guy that she's like having a fun day with. It like pans around them in a really cool way. I don't know if that was like a weird kind of camera or whatever. Do not know the lingo, but that shot particularly stood out to me. But there's like a lot of really cool shots.
They did the reflection in the helmet thing when Peacemaker's fighting.
That's cool.
All the like chapter card things where it'll show the text, but it's like all in the world.
Yes.
Like there's the one where it's all the like broken metal on the rooftops and it like pans up. It's like, oh, that's so clever. Yeah, that's so diegetic. Cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. So Starro's death I thought was special. Awesome.
So this is with the Harley thing, right?
Yeah, she has this javelin. She jumps in, and like I expected the javelin just stick in it, but she just jumps right through the eyeball, which is like the sack of fluid. And all the rats follow her in and just start tearing things apart. But like the way the eye looks when it's kind of deflated and everything, it was just so kind of weird. Like I love that like cosmic grossness. What I mean, like not
it's
like a typical
blood. Like this giant eye filling with blood and falling over, and then like that weird floppy it's gross.
It's very gross in like a weird like intergalactic foreign way that I think is so cool. It kind of reminds me of like Lovecraftian horror kind of
totally
almost.
It's like suckers and like tentacles and stuff, and it's filled with the eyeballs filled with rats and blood and there's this clown lady. Like it's just that it was at that point when they're showing all these slow-mo shots of just like her floating around inside the star. I was like, this movie is wild.
It's
like,
really cool.
Really goes for it and it works.
Yeah, and then when Starro falls down and she just like pops up out of the eye and she's all wet and she just gives a thumbs up.
Yeah. Fuck.
It's really neat. I actually thought the Starro stuff was really well done too, because not only was it just a absurd looking thing, this giant pink starfish with a human-esque eyeball in the center, but it was actually really sad because like they say his final words were I was just happy looking at floating and looking at the stars or whatever, and it wasn't until these like American astronauts kidnapped it and just been performing experiments on it several decades. Of course it's gonna want to destroy shit. I don't blame it was kind of sad.
That line, because like it's the general the evil general guy has a star attached to him, so he like the star can talk through which is really cool when they're all screaming and it's just like, oh, holy shit. I was happy floating around in space looking at the stars and then it falls over and it's like, oh man, just that one line kind of like made that whole thing not just this big action set piece but kind of a sad thing.
It was just a really thoughtful, well done movie. It really is a credit to the writing. I mean, the writing's incredible, obviously the direction's beautiful as well,
and it's all James Gunn. I mean, it seems like this was him.
It's a testament to because obviously we've talked about in this episode and at length previously, it's hard to get us on board with a movie like this. I feel like you and I, we go in with low expectations. And when you go into a movie with low expectations, like, you're kind of like fighting against it. Like, you won't like immediately give yourself up to a good, like, you won't immediately give credit to something when credits you, at least me, at least. Like, if I'm going in with something into a movie with preconceived notions that it's not going to be great, it will take a while for me to open up and be like, wait, maybe this is great. You know what I mean? So sure. For it to overcome that and for us to actually be on the other side of it being like, this was actually a really fun, enjoyable movie. Yeah. It was like genuinely funny at times. It had a great cast.
I was laughing out loud numerous times throughout this movie.
Yeah.
Like, it really got me.
Great humor. And just sometimes the violence was so gratuitous that it was funny.
And it looked good.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they had that cool, like, climactic battle between, like, Peacemaker is about to kill, I think, Ratcatcher, mm-hmm. and Idris Elba does, like Mortal Kombat 3 stage fatalities down through a bunch of things. And then the tiny bullet through the thing actually pays off. And, like, yeah, it's from the casting to the writing to the directing, music, the effects, like, the humor, mm-hmm. like, it's kind of hitting on all the things I like movies for.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I was just entertained throughout. I'd say in the middle section kind of dragged a little more, but incredible beginning, incredible end. And like, even that middle section that kind of dragged a little bit, it mm-hmm. wasn't bad by any means. Like, there's funny stuff too, where it's like they're going to rescue Margot Robbie and they're like climbing up the building. Mm-hmm. And they got this whole plan with like Cena covering it from a sniper's nest. And she's like, hey, what are you guys doing? It's like, oh, shit. Like, we're coming to rescue you.
Yeah, that was really funny. It's a great movie. It's really smart and enjoyed it thoroughly.
Yeah, this is my, like, you know, as much as we've shit on superhero movies in the past, like, I would prefer them all to be like this. I like liking things more than I like disliking and criticizing things. So it's like, this is the best case scenario where we go in, it's like, all right, everyone's saying this is good, mm-hmm. but they've said that before and we didn't like it. And then it's like, right away, I was like, okay, yep, this seems good.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm right there with you.
Yeah. So that is The Suicide Squad. As far as I understand, it is only streaming on HBO Max until, I believe, early September. I want to say September 5th. So if you're listening to this episode as it airs, hop on it if you want to catch it now before, I don't know if it's going to go to, like, pay to rent or DVD mm-hmm. or Blu-ray or whatever it is. So, yeah, check it out while you can if you've got HBO Max. I think it's also in theaters. So, yeah, kick-ass movie.
Indeed.
It was great. And
Speaking of kick ass.
Oh, our patrons who kick ass? Oh, gee. Yeah, if you go to patreon.com/paintingthestream, you can become a patron of this here podcast. It's real simple. We have a $1 $5 tier.
That's it.
And it gives you ad-free episodes.
Wow.
It gives you access to early episodes.
Wow.
It gives you access to the Discord.
Wow.
And also, it gets you a personalized for you, written for you by Bonk. Bonk who? Bonk, do we have someone this week?
We sure do, Daniel.
Who do we got?
This week, we are honoring our friend Tyler.
Tyler!
Tyler,
hello.
If you're out there, if this is permeating your eye, your ear holes and your eye
You could be looking at the podcast art, like mm-hmm. Billy Joe Shaver, the girl in Godzilla vs. Kong. Remember, she was staring at the
That's what you do when you listen to a podcast. Stare at the thumbnail the whole time.
Yep.
I hope you're having a great day, and I hope this Bonku puts a smile on your face, and thank you for your support. Tyler reached the field where the town folk awaited him, darts and nets in tow.
He has the darts and nets.
No, the townsfolk.
Oh, okay. So he's possibly in trouble here.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
okay. He did something real bad.
Well, I hope you come out the other side unscathed. But thank you very much for
your
patronage.
Tyler.
Thanks, Tyler. And also, that reminds me, that one part of the movie, Suicide Squad, kind of reminded me of Predator, when they're like going after the village. They're coming in through the jungle. And you know, because like it's part of Predator when they all go down there. And
oh, God, that movie's so good. Predator.
I'll watch it again sometime. But yeah, that's it for the podcast episode. By the way, I forgot to mention, if you want to do a year of the Patreon at a 15% discount, we have
that's
that option
pretty big
now.
Discount.
15%. That was like the maximum. They had a range we could mm-hmm. pick, and we said give the folks the biggest discount they can if they're going to be kind enough to sign up for a year of patronage.
But even if you're not a patron, you're just listening. You know, we really appreciate it.
Absolutely. If you are listening to our little podcast here, we appreciate you each and every week.
What are we on? What episode are we on now?
We're in like 100, high 170s, I think.
Wow, we're coming up in 200.
Haven't missed a single Sunday at 8 a.m. Mm-hmm. We, it's been good.
Not a lot of podcasts can say that they have that many episodes.
No. I work in the podcast industry, and I have a good view of all this uh-huh. stuff. And like, you know, almost 200 consecutive episodes. We've been doing this.
Yeah.
Well, it's been great.
It's been great. Had a funny fact the other night when we were sitting around, we watched together, this doesn't count the movies we watched independently, This year we watched 38 movies.
I think it was 38 so far.
And obviously this podcast has a lot to do with that. So that's just really awesome that we get to, you know, share this stuff with each other and gives us a great excuse to hang out and watch new stuff. And it's just been awesome.
Yeah, it's a great way every week to make sure we're at least, because, you know, we're busy people. We have stuff going on and, like, you know, it would be easy, I think, otherwise to just kind of be like, oh, we'll watch something next week or we'll watch that next week or whatever. But, like, this has been kind of a nice thing where it's like, hey, we got to watch something this week, you know?
And really pay attention.
Yeah, totally.
Not like just sit and like kind of half watch.
Yeah.
Except for The Bachelor. I think we kind of half watch The Bachelor, but The Bachelor doesn't.
Bachelor requires 90 hours.
Yeah, that requires about 5% of your attention to tell what's going on.
Yeah, so. Every other one we were full blown attentive for sure, even the bad stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
But thank you all for listening each and every week. And Bonk, thanks for sitting here with me each and every week.
Sorry, I keep moving and shifting. I'm wearing like shorts.
You're fine.
And this is kind of itchy on my thighs.
You're totally fine. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, sweetheart.
And folks, we will see you all next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.